Amen. So Ruth is where we're going to be. The whole book of Ruth is what we're going to cover, this whole story. And if you would, stand with me in honor of the reading of God's word, and I'll read to us verses 1 through 18 of chapter 1. Ruth chapter 1, verses 1 through 18. This is the setup to the whole book. It says, "In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land, and a man of Bethlehem in Judah went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. The name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife, Naomi. And the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem in Judah. They went into the country of Moab and remained there, but Elimelech, the husband of Naomi, died, and she was left with her two sons. These took Moabite wives. The name of the one was Orpah, and the name of the other Ruth. They lived there about 10 years, and both Mahlon and Chilion died, so that the woman was left without her two sons and her husband. Then she arose with her daughters-in-law to return from the country of Moab, for she had heard in the fields of Moab that the Lord had visited his people and given them food. So she set out from the place where she was with her two daughters-in-law, and they went on the way to return to the land of Judah. But Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, 'Go, return each of you to her mother's house. May the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. The Lord grant that you may find rest, each of you, in the house of her husband.' Then she kissed them, and they lifted up their voices and wept. And they said to her, 'No, we will return with you to our people.' But Naomi said, 'Turn back, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Have I yet sons in my womb that they may become your husbands? Turn back, my daughters. Go your way, for I am too old to have a husband. And if I should say I have hope, even if I should have a husband this night and should bear sons, would you therefore wait till they were grown? Would you therefore refrain from marrying? No, my daughters, for it is exceedingly bitter to me for your sake that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me.' Then they lifted up their voices and wept again. And Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. And she said, 'See, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law.' But Ruth said, 'Do not urge me to leave you or to return from following you. For where you go, I will go, and where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord do so to me and more also, if anything but death parts me from you.' And when Naomi saw that she was determined to go with her, she said no more." This is God's word. You can be seated. So the story of Ruth is a story of a certain kind of love that is found most clearly and most gloriously in the Bible. There are echoes and shadows of this kind of love all over the world, but in the Bible we see a particular kind of love, and we see it in its most pure form. And this book, the book of Ruth, is an illustration. It's real life. It happened. But what we learn from the story is what biblical love is. So if each woman in Jesus' lineage has a story, then Ruth's story tells us about the kind of love through which and in which Jesus Christ came. I wonder what you would say is the greatest love you've ever known. What is the greatest love that you have ever known? Maybe a sibling. Maybe a parent, maybe not a sibling, maybe a friend. What's the greatest love that you've ever known, experienced? Maybe a significant other. And now that you have that, what is the greatest love that you've ever heard about in a story, in a book, or a movie, or from a friend? This story is, I'm not exaggerating when I say that this story is a story about It's a story that points us to the greatest love that anyone could know. It's not an exaggeration. It points us to the greatest kind of love that the world has ever known and that you or I could ever experience. And so we see this story pointing us to that kind of love, a love that we can only experience in Christ, as we'll see. The word for the kind of love we're talking about is chesed. And I just want to say that because it's fun. But that's the Hebrew word, chesed. You say that with me? Chesed. That's the Hebrew word. Now, I don't normally tell you that, but the reason I'm telling you the Hebrew word is because it's somewhat untranslatable. It means love, yes, but it's the same and yet different from our word, love. You think about our word for love, you know, I love my wife. I also love my guitars. I love where I work. I love all kinds of things, but you can tell they're all kinds of, they're different kinds of love. Chesed, I'm not going to say that all morning, by the way, is... it has a broad range of meanings, but it's a deeper love. And so here's what I am going to say all morning, and that is steadfast love. It is steadfast love. It's immovable love. That's what we're going to be talking about, a steadfast love. It's also, sometimes it's translated covenant faithfulness. Now, that's probably not that helpful. Covenant is not a word we use that often, but a covenant is both a relational and a legal term. The closest analogy we have is a marriage where you make promises to be in relationship. And if you're faithful to that, that's covenant faithfulness. And so chesed, steadfast love, is covenant faithfulness. And so here's where we're going. I want to show you what this love is, why it's so important, what it is, and then why we need it. And then how to get it. So simple as that, what it is, why we need it, how to get it. Let's start with what steadfast love is. We see what it is in the story of Ruth. We just read how it started. It was the time of the judges. There was a famine in the land. Most likely the famine was the Lord's curse on the land because in the time of the judges, everyone was doing what was right in their own eyes. People had abandoned their Lord, if you were with us last week. So there was a famine. And so Elimelech took his wife Naomi and their two sons and went to Moab, where apparently there was food. So they went to where there was Moab. Most likely this means they were a family of some means. They were Ephrathites, which means Ephrathah was the name of Bethlehem before it was called Bethlehem. So this family had been in Bethlehem for generations. They were one of the families that had built the town, and they had the means to flee the famine. They were probably prominent in the city, and that's going to be important a little bit later. But they moved to Moab, and then as we read, Elimelech died. Naomi was left a widow, and it's a very dangerous thing in those days to be a widow, because if you were a widow, there was no protection. There was no source of income for you. You couldn't work. It was dangerous to be a widow. But luckily, she had her two sons. But as we read, that only lasted 10 years. Each of her sons took a Moabite wife, Orpah and Ruth, and they lived there together 10 years, and somehow we're not told how the two sons die. And now she is a widow. She's utterly alone. She has nothing to cling to. And we read that finally there was food beginning to come back in Bethlehem. And so she decided, well, I'll go home. It's bad enough to be a widow, but to be a widow in a foreign land was even worse, even more dangerous. So she went on the way, and as we heard, she tried to persuade her daughters-in-law to stay. It makes most sense for y'all to stay in Moab. Why would you come with me? Stay here, find a husband. And we have to look at verse 8, because that's the first time that we see this word, chesed, this word for steadfast love. In verse 8, she prayed a blessing on them, as we read, and she said, may the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with me. And that word kindly is the word we're talking about. May the Lord deal in steadfast love toward you as you've dealt with me. And so here's the first part of our definition of what steadfast love is. We see in this that steadfast love implies action. In this case, that the Lord would protect and provide for the two daughters-in-law. So we could say steadfast love is action on behalf of another. It is action, faithful action on behalf of another. Well, the story keeps going. At first, they both said no. There was more arguing. As we read, Orpah agreed. Then Naomi tried one more time on Ruth, but Ruth gave this beautiful oath. And in that oath, in verses 16 and 17 of chapter 1, we can see that steadfast love identifies with the other. Look back at those verses with me. Verse 16. For where I will go, I will go where you go. Where you lodge, I'll lodge. Your people shall be my people, your God, my God. So Ruth, a young Moabite woman, commits herself to an Israelite widow. Naomi is probably right that it would be better for her, easier for her to go back home. But Ruth trades. She gives her identity. She takes on Naomi's identity. And she even changes her God. So steadfast love identifies with the other person. And I want you to notice that in this, Ruth did not try to talk Naomi off the cliff of what had happened to her. Some of your friends and family members have gone through very difficult things in their lives, maybe even something like this. Just take a look at Ruth and see her as an example for how to deal with that when that happens. How do you sit with somebody who is grieving? See, Ruth didn't say to Naomi, you know, it's not that bad. Get over it, or you'll get through it. She didn't try to pretend the situation was better than it was. She didn't deny the tragedy. She said, I'll go with you. I will be with you. Brené Brown is the name of a woman who was a scholar. She was secular and worked in a university, didn't believe in God, and she came to a point in her life where she had experienced midlife crisis of sorts. You can see her testimony online. And what happened was her counselors, her therapists, told her that what you need to do is get back in church. And what she expected when she came back to church, this is her analogy, she expected it to be like an epidural, like it would take away the pain. If I come back to church, the pain and the suffering of my life will go away. But she said what she realized when she came is that church is not an epidural, church is a midwife. Church sits with you in your pain and your suffering and says, push. It's supposed to be hard. I'll be with you. And that's what Ruth does here. That's what steadfast love is. I'll go with you. It identifies with the other. Well, Ruth and Naomi returned to Bethlehem. When they got there, everyone recognized Naomi, probably because she was prominent in the city before she left. They all recognized her, and it says in verse 19, is this Naomi? It says, really, we can't believe our eyes. It's been so long. Now, Naomi means pleasant. That's her name. And she said, don't call me pleasant, call me Mara, which means bitter. For the Lord has dealt very bitterly with me. I went away full, and the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me pleasant when the Lord has testified against me? Now, at this point in the story, it's tempting to look down on Naomi like she shouldn't have said these things, isn't it? And actually, some commentators go that way. When they see this, they say, Naomi lacked faith. Why would she accuse God of this? Can't she see her part in the problem? But I actually think that's going the wrong way. I actually think she is here, even in this, a model of steadfast love. She could have stayed in Moab. She could have abandoned the God of Israel. But instead, she came back and she acknowledges who's in charge, God Himself. And so another part of our definition is that steadfast love stays faithful even when everything is lost. It stays faithful even when everything's lost. Now, could she have had more faith? Sure. One preacher on this text recalls Joseph. And in the story of Joseph in Genesis, at one point, Well, you have to know the background. Joseph was thrown into a dungeon. He was thrown into a pit. It was bleak. There seemed to be no hope. But he arrived in Egypt, stayed in the dungeon, and through a series of God-ordained events, became the second in command in all of Egypt. And so at the end of this story, Joseph says to his brothers, who were the ones who sold him into the pit, he says, "As for you, you meant it for evil against me, but God meant it for good." And one pastor even says that Naomi should have said something like that. But here's the thing. Naomi hadn't gotten to the point of resolution yet. She was still in the pit. She was still down in the dungeon. And so steadfast love for her meant staying faithful, acknowledging God, even when everything was lost. And she does that. "It's the Almighty who has dealt bitterly with me." So the story goes on. They return. Naomi and Ruth are in Bethlehem. It's the time of the barley harvest. Chapter 2, verse 1 tells us that there was a good man, a worthy man. His name was Boaz, who happened to be related to Elimelech. And here again, there's some backstory that's helpful to know, because in Deuteronomy 25, there's a custom laid out in Israel. And the custom is that if a husband dies and leaves a widow, then his brother is supposed to marry the widow and continue the line, right? To have children on behalf of his deceased brother. It was a kind of protection, even if it seems strange today. It was a way of ensuring that family lines would not die out. So Boaz is related to Elimelech, and that's foreshadowing in the story, as we're going to see. Well, keeping moving through chapter 2, in another demonstration of steadfast love, Ruth goes out into the fields to glean for herself and for Naomi. There were social provisions in Israel. It was a kind of welfare that if you had a field, you wouldn't pick up the gleanings. You would leave that for the poor and for the widow. And she goes out to do this, to supply food for Naomi. Now, this was dangerous. She could have been assaulted in the fields. She was of a different ethnicity in the fields. She could have been insulted, but she goes out to do it. And so we'll add now to our definition of steadfast love. Once again, steadfast love risks personal safety for the benefit of the other. Steadfast love risks personal safety. Now, stay with me here. Let's finish this definition of it through this story. She goes out. She comes to Boaz's field. Says she just so happened to. But we know she didn't just so happen to. This is the Lord's work. He has led her here. Boaz comes into the field and he greets his laborers with, "The Lord be with you," and they answered, "The Lord bless you." Now, I don't know if you're going to go with me on this one, okay, for this part of the definition, but I'm going to put it out there for your consideration. What would the people, if you're a boss, if you have employees, or if you're a parent, you have kids, what would the people who are under your authority say to you when you come into the field? Do they say, "The Lord bless you," or do they curse you under your breath? And so here's, I'm not sure if you're going to go with me, but I think steadfast love makes you a good boss, makes you a good parent, if you're the kind of person who loves faithfully, even those who are under you. Well, Boaz learns who Ruth is. She asked politely whether she might glean in the field, and she's been hard at work all day with only a short rest. I would say this, steadfast love doesn't just give the appearance of work, but it works hard. And then Boaz addresses her directly. He addresses her with steadfast love. He says, "Stay here. Don't work elsewhere. You might be in danger if you go elsewhere. You might be harassed." One commentator says it's the first anti-sexual harassment policy in the workplace when he says, "I've told my men not to touch you, not to assault you, not to bother you." And so here are two more things about steadfast love. Steadfast love inspires steadfast love. Ruth has acted in steadfast love, and now Boaz is returning that. And number two here, steadfast love will be rewarded by God. Say, where is that? Verse 12, chapter 2. Boaz says to her, "The Lord repay you for what you have done, and a full reward be given to you by the Lord." So Boaz is right to suggest that steadfast love does get rewarded by God. Psalm 18 says, "The Lord dealt with me according to my righteousness, according to the cleanness of my hands. He rewarded me." Jesus himself said, love your enemies and do good and lend, expecting nothing in return, and your reward will be great. And so there is reward for steadfast love from God. Will it get you into right standing with God? No, as we're going to see. But there is reward. So Boaz responded in steadfast love. Hang with me here. We're going to get through this story. He invited her to have lunch, which meant you're one of us. Even though you're ethnically different than us, you are one of us now. Come eat with me. He even instructed his workers to leave some bundles in the field so it would be easier for her. Well, Naomi was shocked when Ruth came home. She said, where have you been? Where did you get all of this? And Ruth told the story of Boaz's steadfast love. It even says at the end of chapter 2, may he be blessed by the Lord whose kindness, again is that word steadfast love, whose steadfast love has not forsaken us. So Boaz has loved with this kind of steadfast love. She reminds, Naomi reminds Ruth that they're related. And then chapter 3, verse 1, Naomi comes up with a plan. She comes up with a plan. Look at that verse, if you will, with me. It says, my daughter, should I not seek rest for you that it may be well with you? So again, in another act of steadfast love, Naomi is concerned with Ruth's well-being. She comes up with this plan that what will happen is that Boaz is winnowing in the field, and so typically this would be up on a hillside. There's a field, right? And then there's a hill beside it, and you would take your barley up on the hillside where there's a steady breeze, and you would throw it up in the air, and that would separate the part you could eat from the part you couldn't eat. And Boaz was known to do this at night when the breeze probably was more steady. And so the plan was that Ruth would go after he had fallen asleep, guarding the grain on the hilltop, and would uncover his legs, which would then make him cold and wake him up, and she would have laid down there, and he will wake up. It says that he was startled, probably because it was cold, and say, who is this woman? And the plan was that she would then propose to him. And that's exactly what she did. Verse 9 says, he's startled, he wakes up, who are you? He asks, she answered, I'm Ruth, your servant. Spread your wings over your servant, for you're a redeemer. That's a Hebrew idiom for marry me. So it's crazy. She asks him to marry her. That was not done in those days. She is of another ethnicity. That was not done in those days. She is his servant, asking her boss for marriage, also not done in those days. But Boaz recognizes it as another act of steadfast love. He sees it for what it truly was. Verse 10, he says, may you be blessed by the Lord, my daughter. You have made this last kindness, and that again is the word, steadfast love, greater than the first. And that you have not gone after young men, whether poor or rich. So Boaz recognizes what Ruth has done, and I think we can say from this that steadfast love looks beyond status and appearance to the heart. Steadfast love looks beyond status and appearance. She has chosen Boaz. He recognizes it. But there's a complication in the story. The complication is that there was a nearer relative who had first rights to redeem the field and her. We see Boaz mention this on that evening at the hilltop, and he says, but don't worry, in the morning I'm going to go take care of it, and if he redeems you, then fine, but if not, I will redeem you. And he's a man of his word. He does everything he says. He goes to the town in chapter 4, verses 1 through 5, and he pulls together the leaders of the town so that there would be an official proceeding. And he invites the nearer relative to the town square. And he says, you need to know, there's a field available. Will you redeem it? And the man says, I will. Boaz says, you also need to know that if you redeem it, you also redeem Ruth. Take her to be your wife. And the man says, never mind. And he actually says that because I cannot redeem it for myself, verse 6, lest I impair my own inheritance. He realized that it's going to cost him if he takes Ruth on. So the man did not want to risk his inheritance to provide for Ruth and Elimelech. So he gave up the right to Boaz. Boaz gladly took it. The townspeople were witnesses. Boaz redeemed the field, married Ruth. He said the reasons why in chapter 4, verse 10. They're noble, good reasons. The people saw it and they said, we are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your house like Rachel and Leah, who together built up the house of Israel. May you be renowned in Bethlehem, and may your house be like the house of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah, because of the offspring that the Lord will give you by this young woman. It's a beautiful blessing. And so it's a celebration of the steadfast love that's happened throughout this story. So they married. And even though Ruth couldn't conceive for 10 years, for Mahlon, her former husband, the Lord gave them a son. And the son's name was Obed, the father of Jesse, the father of David. Of course, David is the king who was coming in Israel, and he's the second most important figure in the entire Old Testament, second only to Moses. So, in Naomi's life, she went out full and was brought back empty, and then the Lord filled her and her family beyond what she could have imagined. The Lord brought fullness out of her emptiness, made her the great-great-grandmother of King David. She was brought into this royal lineage. The Lord was working. And so in the end, the greatest steadfast lover in the story is God himself, because he chose Ruth out of the Moabites to believe him. He brought them all together. It just so happened they found one another. He gave Ruth and Boaz a child when Ruth formerly couldn't bear children. He placed them in the lineage of David the king, and in doing so, as we know with this sermon series, he placed them in the lineage of the ultimate king, King Jesus himself. So it's a beautiful story. God brought fullness out of emptiness for these people, and notice too that he did it for Israel. In those days, everyone did what was right in their own eyes, but God sent them a king. He was working behind the scenes to redeem them. And so this last part of our definition, steadfast love comes from the God who loves steadfastly, always keeping his promises. It comes from the God who loves steadfastly, always keeping his promises. So that was a lot of story. Let's sum it up. What is steadfast love? It is faithfulness to act on behalf of another. It identifies with the other. It stays faithful even when everything is lost. It risks personal safety for the benefit of the other. Apparently, if you're going with me here, it makes you a good boss. It doesn't just give the appearance of work. It works hard on the behalf of others. It inspires steadfast love. It will be rewarded by God. It looks beyond status and appearance to the heart, and it comes from the God who loves steadfastly, always keeping his promises. So, why do we need this love? Well, after that description, I mean, of course we need it. Who doesn't want this kind of love in their life? Even describing it, we see why we need it. We know that we need it. I mean, we read stories that are all about it, where everything turns out good in the end. We see movies and we're disappointed when the love doesn't work out in the end. We know that we need this kind of love in our lives. We look for it. So we know we need it. We also need it because we're commanded to give this kind of steadfast love. The two great commandments, if you're a Christian, are love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. That's the kind of love it's talking about. We're commanded to give this kind of love, and we need it before we can give it. But there's a couple of problems. The first problem is that we're afraid of it. We're afraid to be loved like this and to love like this. I remember a time, this is a little bit of a silly example, but I was riding the bus in elementary school, and I was very insecure in elementary, it was middle school, so I was very insecure. Anybody else insecure in middle school? All right, cool, thanks. Now I feel better, finally, after all these years. People made fun of me in middle school a couple times when they found out that I liked a certain artist who can't sing. His name is Tom Petty. I still like him. I'm proud of it now. One time on the bus, I told somebody asked me, hey, what music do you like? I said, well, to be honest, my favorite's Tom Petty. And he said, yeah, me too. And I said, don't lie to me. That's what I said. Don't lie. I was afraid that he might actually be serious. It had made me cynical. And I'm just saying, we're afraid to be loved like this. And if you're ever cynical, I think it might be because you're afraid that someone could actually love you and the weird things you like. And if you like, I know there's a couple of you like Tom Petty. Awesome. But we do this in our relationships. That's a bit of a silly example, but we do it in our marriages as well. If you're married, we do it in our significant other relationships. We do it all over the place. We're afraid to be loved, and so we, you know, there's actually an app that you can download. I'm not going to say the name of it. There's an app you can download on your phone, and the way it works is it shows you pictures of your friends, and you can say, I like you. But it doesn't tell them that you clicked that unless they've clicked your picture and say, I like you. I'm just saying, that's fear. If you're afraid to go and say to somebody, hey, I like you, I don't know whether you like me, then you're afraid of steadfast love, this kind of love. So we're afraid of it. Some of you are going to go delete that app now, hopefully. We're afraid to give it because we might get hurt. We're afraid to receive it. And the other thing is we're too proud to get involved with it. We're too proud to give it. Steadfast love. I'm married. I don't know if you're married. I know some of you are not married, obviously, but you can relate to this. There are things that happen in my house that I feel justly make me angry. Anybody relate to that? And what I want to do when that happens is go in a room, lock the door, and wait till somebody comes and apologizes to me. I'm being too proud to love with steadfast love when I do that. Same thing if you block somebody on your phone, whatever. Like, pride gets in the way of steadfast love, just like fear gets in the way of steadfast love. So we need it, but there's some problems, there's some obstacles. And so that's why I want to end by telling you how to get it. How do you get steadfast love? How do you get it so you can give it? We get steadfast love because God steadfastly loved these people. He was faithful to fulfill his promises to bring about King David, who would then bring about King Jesus. And Jesus is the steadfast love. He is the ultimate example of it. He alone loved God perfectly, steadfastly, and others. And he did so in our place. So we get steadfast love because God steadfastly loved these people, and he has steadfastly loved us in Christ. I want to show you specifically what we see about our Redeemer by looking at this Redeemer, Boaz. And this comes from a guy named Gleason Archer. The Redeemer in Israel was required to be a blood relative. Elimelech was a blood relative. Jesus became a blood relative to all of us by the virgin birth. He was born to Mary, a daughter of Eve, so he's in our lineage. The Redeemer in this story and in Israel's day, Boaz, must have the money to purchase the forfeited inheritance. And, of course, Christ had the money, the merit, to pay the price for sinners. The Redeemer in that day must be willing to buy back the forfeited inheritance, not only have the money, but be willing to do it. As we saw, there was one who was not willing. Well, Christ laid down his life on his own volition. He was willing to come and to die to buy us back. And the Redeemer, Boaz, had to be willing to marry the wife of the deceased kinsman. And of course, Jesus died to marry his bride, the church. So Jesus is the great Redeemer. Jesus is the one foreshadowed by Boaz. Boaz preserved Elimelech's inheritance in obedience to God's law for the joy of gaining Ruth. Jesus purchased the church's inheritance. That's us if you believe in Jesus. In obedience to God's law for the joy of gaining us. Do you see what I'm saying to you? What I'm saying to you is you are loved steadfastly by God. He sent his son for you. His son took on the incarnation. He took on flesh for you. His son lived the perfect life that we should have lived. He loved steadfastly when we do not love steadfastly. He did that for you in your place, so that you would get credit for it when he died to take punishment for the fact that we did not do it. We have not lived as we should have lived. So our brother, Jesus, willingly sacrificed his inheritance in order to redeem us. He gave his inheritance up on the cross. Therefore, you are steadfastly loved. And if you are steadfastly loved, then you can love steadfastly. Some of you are weary this week. Some of you have been challenged this week to love in that kind of way. Somebody in your world has challenged you, has forced you, made you not want to love them. And I'm saying to you, look to Jesus, your brother who gave up his inheritance, who emptied himself to love you, and empty yourself to love them. See that you are loved, and then love steadfastly. Some of you are weary. Some of you are proud. Some of you are like me when I want to go in the room. Give it up. Let the steadfast love of the Lord into your heart. Acknowledge that you have wronged as well as having been wronged. And love that person. You have to see that you are loved before you can love. If you want steadfast love, you need faith in the steadfast lover. Some of you think, are worried what this would mean for you. Probably all of us are worried what this would mean. If we really did this, if we really believed that this was true, what would that mean? It would cost us everything. It would mean every time somebody wrongs you, you'd have to turn the other cheek. It would mean you'd have to forgive 70 times seven times. So where are you going to get the strength? You're only going to get the strength if you have faith that Jesus did that first for you in your place. And so the beauty of the story of Ruth is it's a story of chesed love, steadfast love that endures forever. And it's supremely the story of God's chesed love. He steadfastly loves. His steadfast love endures forever for you and for me. We see it in the cross. So believe it. Have faith in it. Risk everything. Take hold of it. And then love steadfastly. And hope, because the King has come.